Hello, I'm Stephanie Belcher.
And I'm Del Belcher, and welcome to
Two Peas in a Podcast,
a relationship advice show from two people who like each other
very, very much. You know, we didn't talk about what we were going to talk about for an intro.
Intros are for noobs. Intros are for noobs. We just fly off the seat of our pants like a professional, like a Dan Rather type.
I know what we can say. We've been taking a pregnancy parenting class.
Oh, yeah.
And tomorrow is our last of 6 2-hour classes.
I love this class. I think out of becoming a future father, which is what I've been calling myself, I think that this has done... There's a lot of books and stuff out there for dads, and a lot of friends have advice, but this class has done a ton in preparing me for being a dad.
Yeah, I would say Mondays I call anxiety night because it's a lot of information that is very necessary, like what labor might be like. And I tend to spend Monday night learning, and then I spend Tuesday and Wednesday feeling incredibly anxious about everything I've learned.
Mm-hmm.
But then the rest of the week, I feel grateful that I have information and can make better decisions.
I think what this is, you ever watch Boy Meets World?
Yeah.
Do you know in Corey, this is either Sean or Mr. Feeney, and both of them played similar roles in Corey's life. But it was, he had like a football helmet, and they said, life is tough. Get a helmet, and then they like slap the helmet on his head.
That's
and
fair.
That's basically what this class is. You're learning about everything you knew about babies. Throw it out the window because you're wrong. You think babies can sleep on their back? Guess what? They can't.
They can. Don't say that. Let's not give any parenting advice because we're not parents.
We're not
yet.
Parent advice, but it's like that. But I've learned a lot of good stuff about like what to watch when you're going into labor, what to expect in the delivery room, how I can best help you before and after, that you should not eat spaghetti before you go into labor.
Oh, yeah.
These very important things that I think really, really matter.
I also really liked it because I think we probably would have paid to do something like this just to have the information, but it was offered for free at our local hospital, so I'm hoping that is a resource that would be available to other parents. Hey, if you're around the Jackson, Michigan area, look up Henry Ford Allegiance Health. Full disclosure, I work there, but it's called the Stork Club, and you could take classes there about parenting for free.
Wait a minute. This whole time, it's been the Stork Club, and I didn't even know that.
It's a club... called first. Well, this is one of the series of classes that they have. Okay. So, I don't know when you fully join the club if you have to take a few more classes.
Because I'm thinking vests, badges, pledges.
I'm just thinking all you need is one of those stork caps and then one of those little.
And then they give you a baby with a
pretty
bird,
much.
And then you're done. You graduate.
But I think other hospitals probably have some resource like this.
It's been all in all, it's been really good. But I mean, it's 2 hours every Saturday night, and it's Monday night. I don't even know Monday night. So it would have been at time of recording. Last night would have been our last one, and like, it's been great. I think, like I said, it's done a lot to prepare me. I think that I'm as ready as you can be, because from what I've heard, you can't really be super ready. You can only be mostly ready.
But I am 100% ready for it to be done. Like, after this, I'm punching the clock and just done.
Have you ever sat in a chair that was scientifically designed for you to slip out of?
These chairs are horrible at this class. Just not a
they're
good
made,
time.
They're made so that you... it's designed so that you pay attention.
They brought them in from medieval times. They were torture chairs. And they pretty much just wheeled them into this room. And then they're like, hey, you're 8 months pregnant. Sit in the world's most uncomfortable chair.
But you do get to bring your pillows.
I do.
There are not many public things where you are not just allowed to, but encouraged to bring your own pillows from your own bed, where your body sleeps. And so that's pretty great.
Yeah.
Okay, Stephanie. So, We're coming back. We got this baby's coming on the way, but we've got this podcast in the meantime. So to all of our new friends, our old friends, all the pod squad out there, what do we do here, Steph?
So this is Two Peas in a Podcast. We've got two parts to the show. The first part is Peas and Cues, where we take a question from our pod squad and talk about it. The second part is a split where we take a relationship or advice article torn from the headlines and we talk about it.
So I'm very excited because we have some very good questions. And I get these questions from you, the Pod Squad. So if you have a question or comment or something you'd like answered in the P's and Q's of the show, just send it to contactppodcast@gmail.com or drop it by on facebook.com/groups/ppodcast. The conversation is always going. And if you have a relationship advice question, you can get in contact with us there, and we'd love to have you. So, sourced from the Pod Squad, here's our question for P's and Q's this week. Dear P's, last fall, I married my best friend. We've known each other since middle school. At first, I thought this would be a perfect match. What a better wife than my best friend to make a marriage that works. However, marriage is turning out to be super challenging. I thought since we knew each other so well, it might be that this marriage would be a breeze, but it isn't. And we keep fighting about dumb stuff like towels and what time to eat dinner. How is it that our years of friendship hasn't made marriage any easier?
I think that's a fantastic and totally fair question.
Well, we've been married for 5 years, and sometimes we still fight about towels.
You know, we've talked about this before. The number one thing that couples fight about?
Dumb stuff.
Nothing.
Nothing. It's nothing.
It's nothing. I don't even know what we were fighting about sometimes.
Yeah. I even think, you know, we knew each other for a few years before we got married, and I think most people expect some challenges. But I think what we're getting up with the question asker is, if you know someone you feel so well beforehand, are there things that marriage just actually changes?
Well, and we knew each other in different contexts, though. Like, I think it's a little different because we knew each other because we had worked together for a year or so, but we didn't. But they knew each other since middle school, which is a long time to know someone. And they knew each other over developmental years. So middle school, high school, that's a lot.
The most deep, dark secrets.
Yeah, so I totally get why that question could come up, because you would think if you had seen each other change and develop over those years that moving into these years would be, oh, we made it through this, so making it through marriage shouldn't be as difficult.
That expectation of, we know each other so well, it's my best friend, like marriage is going to be a super easy cakewalk, and then you get to it and it's like, this is a very difficult cakewalk.
So here's my general thought. I think all experiences that are new, doesn't matter what they are. First trip to Italy, first marriage, hopefully this is your only marriage, first job. My thought is the first year or 6 months or duration of that is just all of the expectations you had getting gradually torn away from you one by one and beaten down until you're into reality. And so I think what's likely happening is you had expectations that you didn't know about. It sounds like you thought it would be maybe easier than it is. And now you're getting met with what reality of your marriage might be like. And I don't think that means your marriage is bad, but it's probably different than what you were expecting. And when your expectations are different than reality, it creates like a real sense of turmoil and you just feel like crap all the time.
Yeah. And I think there's that. I want to maybe put it into, here's how my brain works with my terms. I think marriage, now this might not be for everyone, but I would say in general, marriage, it's kind of like a promotion. And say you're at work and you get a promotion and it's in the same thing that you're doing. But once you get that promotion, you have more responsibilities, you have more things to do, and it's going to be harder. But as with a promotion, there are some benefits. And I think there's definitely marriage benefits, but marriage is like the next level of relationship. And it's going to be difficult no matter how good you are at dating or how good of a friend you are. It's just like inherent in being the next level.
Yeah, and I just remember going into my first marriage with a lot of expectations for what marriage would be like and then being so very disappointed in what marriage was actually like. Because I feel like there are depictions of marriage that you see in movies or in TV shows, and those are all crap and stupid. Like, none of them get to how hard marriage can be, how much work it takes, the dumb fights you have over nothing. And then you also have the other marriages that you see in your daily life. You might think people have a good marriage, but you never really know. So you might be comparing yourself to other marriages and thinking, oh, well, Johnny and so-and-so have it together. Why can't we be like them? But you don't really know if their marriage is any good. Mm-hmm. So it's a constant comparison. But what you really need to be focusing on is what your marriage is really like and what you can do to make it better and to have a happy marriage with your spouse, which I think is totally doable.
Yeah. And if you're worried about the dumb things, I think that's just kind of comes with the territory. I mean, unless you were like living together or something, there are some things that you will never really know, like body habits.
And, what do you
like,
mean?
Bathroom rituals, towels, toothpastes.
I have no clue what you're talking about.
These are all things that people fight about in relationships.
Yeah, totally.
So those are things that they may never have experienced.
So now there's new stuff.
When you take out the garbage, when you say, I'm going to do the dishes, or how you fold your clothes.
The details.
These are things that tend to start the rifts in relationships and arguments. And that can make marriage rough because you just...
Yeah, like, that's fair.
I don't know how intertwined your lives were exactly before you got married, but it may just be that it's just so many little things are now two have become one, and now you have different habits, and those habits can get really kind of annoying if you don't talk about them and kind of get them figured out and on the same page.
And I think what Del is also saying too is that marriage is just a lot of work every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were going into it expecting a certain amount of ease, that was an unrealistic expectation. Marriage is a lot of work every single day for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Which would then some people might say, well, then what's the point of marriage? Well, let me tell you, marriage is the best.
I love being married to you.
For all the little dumb things that we might fight about, like the whole picture is awesome. Like I get to be with you every day. And we get to pay our taxes together. The struggles, I have you to share my struggles with and my joys with. And it's like legally we are together and responsible for each other. And I just love that. I love it.
Well, we had a 20-minute fight yesterday trying to make a fish fry together, which we'd never done. And I was crazy and insane because whatever. Like, I just was pregnant and losing my mind, apparently. But then... like, we got through it, and we learned something through that experience. And plus, we had this great fish fry together, which we'd never done. And our entire house mm-hmm. smells like fish fry.
It's pretty awesome. And I think what it is with that bonding of marriage, there's this sense of, like, even when things are rough and hard, like, you're committed to each other. And there isn't this question of, oh, you fish fried bad, I'm out of here. It's like, no, we vowed to be together through... good and bad fish fries, through good and bad towel mistakes, through all of those things. And that's that marriage thing that it's going to be difficult. It's going to be stupid sometimes with the arguments that you're having. But I mean,
it's worth it.
Totally worth it. It's so good. And don't beat yourself up that it's harder than you thought it would be.
Oh, yeah. Like, don't beat yourself up at all. Marriage is way harder than I thought it was going to be. I had really weird whatever expectations. Whatever. Everybody does it. Or most people do it. It's totally normal.
It's harder, but it's brought my life to a whole new level. Personally, relationally, with you, everything. Everything is just better.
Yeah, and you can totally do this. Like, this is going to be... you can have an awesome, great, amazing marriage.
You can and you will. And you know
what?
You will. Sometimes, I've always heard this with... when I was going to college, people, and I was like, oh, I'm going to college with my friend. I should room with my friend. And I always heard from people that don't room with your high school friends because you'll get super annoyed with each other. And I was always like, seriously? Until I saw it happen. People know each other so much. And sometimes that is more difficult when you go into a tough situation knowing so much because usually you're not going in thinking like, oh, we need to work together because you already think you have it figured out.
Yeah.
So kind of taking a step back, realize we're at a new level. We're in a new world here, and we're going to figure it out together, and I think you and your wife are going to have an awesome time.
I think so.
It's going to be the best.
Yep.
Well, I hope, question asker, that we could help ease your fears. So thank you for writing. And as I said before, if anyone else has a question for the Pea Podcast, you can send that over through contactpeapodcast@gmail.com or go to our group on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/peapodcast, or check us out on Twitter at peapodcast. And Stephanie, that brings us to...
The Split, where we take a relationship article torn from the headlines and talk about it.
That one, that sound effect was a little bit more staccato.
I liked it. It was tight.
It was tight. Nice and punchy. I like that.
So this article is called Saying I'm Sorry.
I say that a lot.
I say that a lot, too. I said it a lot yesterday.
I think a lot of people say it a lot.
I think some people never say it at all, though, as well.
True.
I can think of a few people where they've said, I never heard my parents say, I'm sorry.
What?
So this article is called Saying I'm Sorry, 3 Steps to a Heartfelt Apology.
So I'm guessing a heartfelt apology is a different situation than when I like forget to check the mail. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Or there's the Canadian sorry. Oh, sorry. Sorry.
So that's a good point. So the article talks about how in society, there might be multiple kinds of apologies, but really, there's the day-to-day apology where if you bump into a stranger on a subway, you go, oh, sorry.
Pardon. Excuse me.
And that's cursory. It's okay. Just a way to get through.
Do you think that maybe waters down what the real sorry is, though?
I don't know.
Okay. Not the topic. Keep going.
So there's those apologies. A lot of people do them. I do them. We say sorry, whatever. But then there's the bigger apologies, the ones where you mess up, you make a big boo-boo.
Boo-boo.
And then you need to apologize to another person.
Po-buddy's nerfect. Stuff like that.
Yes.
Okay.
And so I thought this could be helpful. You can use this in your, if you have a romantic relationship, but it could also be helpful for a mother, sister, brother, whatever.
Let's name all the relationship types. Uncles, cousins, nieces, nephews, grandpa.
Yes.
That's it.
Fantastic.
Okay. So we're saying I'm sorry. We're trying to, I mess up real bad. And sometimes you say sorry and it doesn't take or doesn't hold. Like, so how do I get that real good sorry?
Well, so one of the ways that you should not do that is we've all heard this phrase and maybe some of us have said it. This is a phrase you shouldn't start with.
Oh boy.
Don't lead with this. I'm sorry you feel that way, but... Oh,
that's the worst.
I see
that. Oh, that's 2 of them. You feel that way, and but... Ooh.
So the article... Oh, sorry. The article is by Jonathan Bartlett, and it's on goodtherapy.org, and he has a master's degree in counseling. He's a professional counselor.
He's legit, that Bartlett. Too legit, Bartlett.
People tend to say that phrase as a way to acknowledge that there's some feelings there, but we've all heard that phrase, and when you hear it, you kind of cringe a little.
You're kind of pushing it off. I'm sorry, but I did have a point. You missed that, didn't you?
And so the article goes on to say that quick forgiveness isn't always good, and that when you forgive too quickly, just like, oh, I'm sorry, it's okay, quick, blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
It can leave both parties feeling alone. Mm-hmm. Like the person that needed to say, I'm sorry, didn't fully do the, you know, an apology. And then the other person that needed the apology right. Didn't get to hear it.
So personally, earlier on in our relationship, and I still kind of struggle with this, I would be like, okay, sorry. Just to like, get off my back. Don't bother me. You know, okay, I'm sorry. I'm ashamed. Mm-hmm. I messed up, mm-hmm. Whatever. But in doing that, it sort of bypassed actually like, really being sorry, and it was more for me to feel better than to like, oh wow, I actually hurt my spouse.
That really touched my heart that you admitted that. I appreciate that.
Oh, thanks.
I'm not gonna cry. I'm crying.
I'm sorry I'm making you cry.
But
it's kind of your fault.
And then it goes on to say that sometimes forgiveness in a relationship can take years. True forgiveness, and that's okay. Like, not everything needs to be forgiven right away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But then the other thing I wanted to note about the article, just so you know, this isn't going to be where I'm going to say, like, say these 3 things and say them perfectly.
You'll love number 2.
Yeah. Okay. This is more about for yourself what you need to know for saying I'm sorry in order for you to feel a sense of like a heartfelt apology.
How can I apologize effectively, not to get you off my back, but to like actually have an internal change?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Step one, start with self-compassion.
Whoa, that seems to come, that's a different direction than what I thought.
I know, it's very different than, when I first read the headline, it's different than what I thought it was going to be.
I feel like when you're apologizing, it's like you're lowering yourself to be like, oh, I'm so bad, I'm so sorry. But to show yourself compassion before the sorry, that's like a different total brain process.
And I think that like it's really good. So start with self-compassion. You messed up. We all messed up. You feel bad. You feel guilty.
Right.
You feel like crap because you hurt someone.
Unless you're a narcissist, which go back to episode 46 for more on that.
But most people aren't narcissists. Most people know they mess up.
Right.
And so the best thing that you can do is remind yourself that you still have basic goodness in you.
Oh, I like that.
And so a phrase that it listed a few phrases that you could say, the article did, but one of the phrases it said was, you could say to yourself, I am at fault.
Okay.
I'm still a good person.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked that because it was saying, I did this. So you're acknowledging that you did something wrong. But tell yourself, I'm still okay. I'm still nice. I still do good things.
Mm-hmm. This isn't a definition of all I am.
Correct.
Okay.
And I think that's fair. Like, one mistake shouldn't define you. That's not fair to anybody.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So.
Okay, that's a good one. Number one. Awesome.
Number two. Empathy can be its own reward.
Tell me more.
So when you've wronged someone, empathizing with the person that you've hurt can actually be freeing to you.
Okay.
So it's saying that when you've hurt someone, what you should try to do is empathize with the way that you've hurt them.
Okay.
And so, like, you mess up and you say something really stupid to your spouse, your whatever.
Been there.
I've done that. One of the best things that you can do is imagine how they're feeling, knowing that something was said to them that hurt their heart. And then the article says that it's so good to do that because when you start empathizing with them, you actually start feeling this deep sense of connection.
Oh, okay. And
when you start connecting with another person, that's actually a softening of your attitudes. And that can really help drive a heartfelt apology.
Okay. And empathy. Okay. Now, there's a difference between empathy and sympathy. So it's not just being like, oh, I see you feel bad. It's like understanding that deeper, trying to get in that hole with them.
Yeah, get in the hole with them. And then if you did something that hurt someone, actually try to put yourself in the shoes of the person that you've hurt.
And that's empathy.
So I think it's really easy when you've hurt someone to really focus on how you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, speaking from experience, it's really easy to be like, well, I did this because of da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But what you could do to help yourself get to that place of apology is, like, I made a mistake at work last week, and the mistake that I made ended up, you know, like hurting someone's feelings. So one of the best things that I can do is try to imagine how that person is feeling in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I do that, it's going to be good for our relationship.
And then when it does come to face-to-face apology time, you think that your process of empathizing makes it, does it, you think it makes it easier for you to then kind of relate your apology to them?
I think so.
Okay.
And then that person is going to probably feel more connected to you, too. Oh, sorry.
No, you were going to say something. I wasn't going to say anything. I was just waving my head around like I normally do between while you're talking.
And it says, so you might be asking, okay, why should I try to empathize?
Yeah.
Because most people don't.
Oh.
And when you don't do that, you don't connect with another person. And part of being a human being is being social and having connections.
And I think that's a huge, like, really start, you could practice starting that with your relationships.
And this is me being judgy. I do feel like the biggest thing I see in TV shows or other people is people not trying to understand how another person might be feeling in a situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. Well, that was good.
Number three.
Okay.
Number three, trust as a social experiment.
Oh.
You had kind of started with this one a little bit.
That's because I'm really smart.
I know, you're always like three steps ahead on these articles. I'm like, okay.
I don't know where that comes from. It's definitely not because I like read anything, but I don't know. You just pick great articles, hon.
Aww, you're so cute. You had kind of started saying this. So sometimes apologies can go bad because...
But... That kind of thing.
There's that. But the general social experience is that if you're victorious, you get to punish another person.
Yeah.
And then if you're the victim in a case, you get to vent against the person that hurt you.
Well, that's sort of like the historical evolution of apology, isn't it? Like, eye for an eye. Like, you did this, so now I get to do it to you and tell everyone how bad you are. Exactly. Ha-ha. Say you're sorry. I shame you.
Well, and like, if I never have to say I'm sorry, then I always get to win.
Well, there's, yeah, that too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I haven't put myself in that place of being wrong. So then I never have to be the person that gets to be vented against.
Mm-hmm. That's whack. Is saying sorry losing?
I think it is to a lot of people. Because then it means that if I say I'm sorry, that means that you get to be the quote unquote victim. And then if you're the victim, you get to go about, you know.
Well, that's dumb.
You've never been that blunt with anything.
Well, I don't know. I just don't feel that way, personally. But if maybe someone does. And sorry, I don't. You're not dumb. But this thought process is dumb.
I think that is the general thought process. So that if you say you're sorry, you're weakening yourself and becoming someone who, I don't know, is just
okay.
Weak.
Okay, I could see where that could be a thing.
But then the article goes on to say that after an apology does occur... So hopefully you can get rid of that thought process, and that after an apology does occur, it's okay that trust takes time because there is that dynamic of, well, I'm the person that did something wrong. I'm the person that was hurt, and you have to trust that you can rebuild whatever was broken there.
Yeah, that it's not going to happen again, or if it does, you're more prepared or something like that.
Yeah, something.
Like if I steal your money, you're probably not going to trust me on your money.
Yeah, it'll take some time.
Until I don't steal your money anymore.
Yeah.
And then you'll be better eventually.
Hopefully.
That's the best example I could just pull out of my ears as fast as I could. Right? Is that the thing?
Pull it out of your ears. Are you stealing my money?
No, I'm not. I'm just saying if I did.
If I were stealing your money. If I were
stealing your money.
Here's how I would do it.
Here's how I would do it. You keep track of our money, so I would not be able to do that.
So the article goes on to say that building trust in an apology is really one of the most courageous things that you can do.
Very courageous.
I think so. I think it takes a lot of bravery to be like, you know what? I messed up. And then I think it takes a lot of bravery from the side of the person that's been wronged to not put yourself in the constant place of the victim and just vent and complain about how you were hurt.
Yeah, it's easy to... It's almost fun, I think, to be like, I'm not going to apologize, or I'm not going to accept your apology, and I'm just going to be mad.
I feel that's way more fun.
It is way more fun, but it's wrong.
I feel like I had a long history of doing that, and some cases I still do, because it's way more fun to be like, they hurt me, blah, 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 blah. But it's kind of annoying to a lot of people to always be the victim.
Well, it's like bad for your heart.
Yeah, it is.
I feel that like your soul or your energy or whatever, if you're just like griping about people who cross you all the time, like, that's just not healthy.
Yeah, but it always makes you look good,
which is weird.
Okay, so the article closes by saying it's really courageous to have heartfelt apologies, and a good phrase that you can remind yourself of is, I see what I have done, I can feel what it has done to you, and I hope that you'll be able to forgive me.
Oh. I forgive you for everything. That was such a good one.
Good.
Good. So, tell me through that again. It's...
I see what I have done.
I see what I have done. Steph, I see what I have done.
I can feel what it has done to you.
And I can feel what it has done to you, because I have empathized.
Exactly.
Nice.
And I hope you'll be able to forgive me.
I hope that you will be able to forgive me.
Perfect.
But... I wrecked it. I wrecked
it's it. Done.
It's done. It's over. Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for sharing that with us today.
Yep. You're welcome. I love you.
I love you, too. Did you have any other insights from there that you'd like to sum up?
No, I just liked the article. I thought it was good. We don't talk about saying I'm sorry or forgiveness a lot.
I think I'm going to be an apologizing expert now. Now I know how to say I'm sorry for everything.
Well, if you just never mess up, then you'll just never have to say you're sorry.
That is true love, isn't it?
That's right.
No. Erase what I said in your mind. That's not true. No, Stephanie, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And we'd love to hear your stories of how you and your partner work through apology. If you have any ideas or tips or maybe opinions on the article that we've read today, or even our P's and Q's segment talking about difficulties in marriage, ping us out on our Facebook. Ping us out. Is that even a thing?
It is now.
It is now. Hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/ppodcast, or wherever you're listening to this episode. You can check out the links, click the links, go to the stuff, give us good ratings, comment on SoundCloud or Facebook in the group, and we'd love to hear your opinion and share the show with everyone. I'm trying to get us on Spotify.
Do it.
So we may be on Spotify someday. Someday. I haven't heard back from them yet.
Come on, Spotify.
Come on, Spotify. Get us up there. But yeah, we love our Peapod squad. We love doing this show, and we are so happy that you shared this day with us. So, Stephanie, is there anything else today?
We hope that after listening to this podcast, you learn that you can like each other very, very, very much.